This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The recession has impacted many lives, but perhaps the most public disruption in Charlotte came as the school system struggled to deal with impending budget cuts in the millions of dollars. Throughout the summer, they sought to cushion the blow by involving parents in a series of meetings which laid out the challenge and provided opportunity for input on how to respond to the cuts in the coming year. But perhaps nothing could really prepare people for schools closing and shifting pupil assignments. Reducing the size of the state's largest school system can't be easy, and more serious reductions are staring CMS in the face. Take a look at the newspaper this morning. And staring back is CMS Superintendent Dr. Peter Gorman, who joins us for the hour. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
There's this big article in the paper this morning about major budget cuts affecting education across the state and raising all sorts of questions about where we go from here and how we make it happen, and layoffs of hundreds of teachers, maybe thousands across the state, but hundreds here in the next school year. We've talked about this a little bit, but what has been the most difficult for you personally?
The most difficult part, far and away, is when we have to reduce a teaching position, because that could mean a quality teacher who's impacting kids directly on their academic achievements not with us anymore. The other positions are important, but where it happens is in the classroom.
And what's been the most difficult for you professionally?
To see some of the progress that I think we've made academically that will be chipped away. Mm-hmm. Because we've been on this, we're going to do more with less, do more with less. Mm-hmm. I think we're unfortunately at a point now where we're going to do less with less. And with that, just as a professional educator, my whole goal is helping kids achieve more, and I'm just not sure that for next year we're going to be able to accomplish that.
When you came here, you took over a school system that was growing so fast, it was like it was on steroids or something. You really couldn't build schools fast enough, and suddenly the brakes were applied, and now we're in this contraction phase. Which is more difficult, to keep up with growth or to take it apart?
It's much more difficult to take it apart. But one thing I'll say that not everyone knows is we actually even grew last year. We have 1,800 more students this year than we had last year. So while our budget went down, our number of kids went up. Far and away harder to take it apart. And more painful, because what we did before is we added portables, we added classes to schools, and now, though, we're to the point where instead of that, we're making classes larger and offering less options for kids.
So given the fact that we are able, in spite of some growth, to close schools and shift pupils around to fill schools that perhaps were not as full as they could be, did we waste money in the good times? Did we spend too much that didn't needed to be spent?
Yeah, the way I would respond to that is context matters. And at the time, I think those were probably the right decisions to make in the eyes of some. But in the eyes of others, we shouldn't have. We have an area where we built a group of elementary schools. And if you follow, it's kind of a band where we built about five elementary schools. And looking back, we probably should have built three. But we built five because we previously had five. And when we replaced the old buildings, we built a new building there. And we shouldn't have built all of those. But at the time as well, we were trying to do some things under a different student assignment policy. There was talk that we'll continue to bus kids long, long term. And it was a different time. So The context at the time may have seemed right.
So when some quarters criticize the school system for being wasteful or saying repeatedly saying that money is not the problem, and throwing money at it is not going to solve the problem, these were being said in the good times. Were they wrong? Were they right? Were we? You mentioned that we're operating under a different set of rules back then. Things have changed in terms of legal rules that you were following versus today.
Very much so. Money isn't the problem. Money is a problem. The problem is helping kids learn and achieve. But money is clearly a part of that. And if you look at some things, they say, well, gee, you're still getting results, and we are still getting results, but we're not offering kids all the options that we did. For example, I talked to a student who said, I went and I registered, a high school student, I registered for my classes, and I had to rank the electives I wanted to take, mm-hmm. 1 to 4. Not a single one of those top four are being offered by my school. All were cut. If you ask him, has he been impacted? Yes. Class sizes are larger. Yes. We made some tough cuts, and I think some of the areas we've cut, we should have cut. Sometimes going through a contraction helps you re-examine what you're doing and make good choices, But we're beyond making good choices. We're now making the best of bad choices.
Now you're cutting away flesh. You were cutting some fat, now you're cutting away muscle.
Very much so, yep.
And, at what point will we hit bone?
This year, with these cuts we're about to do. 5, 10, and 15% is what the state's asked us to look at cutting. Just from the state side of the budget, that's $30, $60, and $90 million.
Right.
When I got here, we were about a $1.25 billion a year business. Looks like next year we could be less than $1 billion a year business. That's a pretty dramatic cut.
That is dramatic. We had Eric Davis on, the head of the school board, before the series of meetings this summer and fall that involved parents and students and teachers and the school board and you. To let people have input on what should be done in the face of these cuts. And you went through those meetings, and they were contentious. People got arrested in some of these meetings. Mm-hmm. They were lots of emotions running high. What do you think you could have done differently to assuage those emotions, or could you have, given the fact that you had to do some very drastic things and somebody was going to feel the pain?
Well, somebody was going to feel the pain for sure, unfortunately, but we still could have done things better. The format that we did that listening, I think for many people, too much of it was us listening and was not us responding. And, you know, communications, to really communicate, you got to hear and you've also got to share thoughts. And we did the bulk of it where we went out and we listened. And I think we didn't have enough opportunities where we answered people's questions. And we've got to do a better job with that. And I can tell you, I admire our board chair immensely. And I think he is absolutely the right guy to be mm-hmm. leading us through this process. And
he said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. I think we've learned lessons and we'll do a better job with it. So here's the tough part now as we deal with the budget. So now it's the option of, do you want to cut A or do you want to cut B? And see, there's a group of folks as well, though, that are coming to the table and says, oh, don't make any cuts. Just like when we talked about closing schools, do it later. Well, there is not a later. It's now. There is not a don't do A or B. Mm-hmm. A or B has to be cut. And
do you think people understood that? Is that a difficult message for people to understand? Because they can't. You know, average person can't grasp your budget figures very quickly because you're talking about billions of dollars. We don't deal in billions of dollars in our real lives.
I think it is very difficult for your average person to understand those large of dollar amounts. And that is a very reasonable expectation for them to have a difficult time grasping that. Mm-hmm. But what I put it, we're akin to a family on a fixed income. And the amount of income we have has gone down. We can't print any more money. We can't make any more. We're going to have to make decisions not to do one thing or another. I think as well we had some cases where we circled the wagons and we shot inward. We had times where from the dais at our own board meetings, we would have an individual share something that was factually not true, or some challenges where we had people saying this is being done for this purpose or that purpose. I think that hurt us as well. Mm-hmm. But that's part of it also because this is not just all driven by fact. There's emotion. There is issues of equity. And when you get to the issue of budget, poverty, race, and student achievement, that intersection is not always pretty.
We're going to talk about that a little bit as we go through this program. But all of this Sturm und Drang this summer was over what, $3 million, $6 million?
About close to $7 million.
$7 million in
yep.
cuts. And even you said to one of our reporters here at WFAE that going through all that for about $6 million, you wondered out loud whether that was even worth it.
Sure. But then when you come back and you know, when I reflect on it, every $1 million is over 20 teachers, 21 teachers, 22 teachers. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the 7 million, you know, that can be about 154 teachers. Yeah. That's a lot. That's keeping another high school open.
So we're looking at $7 million and all of the anguish that we went through in the closing of 10 schools and the moving of pupils around. And obviously, when you close schools, you're going to lose principals. You're going to lose some faculty. It would seem to me that they have.
We ultimately will, although class sizes don't increase because you close schools, you take classes from underused facilities, mm-hmm. and you combine two less used facilities to have them reach the maximum. But you save money in support positions, you save money in principals, things like that. Class size doesn't increase from that. But we lose good people.
Now you're looking at, as you just said a few minutes ago, future cuts, $30, $60, $90 million
Yep.
from the budget. What will this system look like if you have to chop $30, $60, $90 million
$90 million will be catastrophic. You know, $30 million will be incredibly difficult.
What does catastrophic mean?
I think we will have, let me give you an example. At high schools, we had we published a list recently of classes over 35 students. And I think you'll dramatically see an increase in the number of classes over 35. We have not cut the arts at our elementaries and middle schools. We've worked incredibly hard to do that.
And the arts would be what?
We still offer music. We still offer art class at all of our elementaries, mm-hmm. all of our middle schools. We have bands, choruses. If we get up to $90 million, I'm afraid that there's schools that are going to look at in making their master schedule, can I afford to offer the full buffet of arts classes that we
Well,
have?
If you had to close 10 schools to save $7 million,
yeah.
what do you do at $30 million? What do you do at $60
million? Increase class size, look at some transportation issues, look at some other programs that we offer.
So if $90 million would be catastrophic, in your words, and $60 million, I think you said, would be awful,
yeah.
what does that mean?
Let me give you a scenario, and I'm very cautious about doing that because the board's got to ultimately make the decision, and one of the problems is when I project what it could look like, people say, so that's what's going to be cut. Here's what I can tell you. We're about 86-87% of our budget is salary and benefits. There's no way we can get to these cuts that we need to at this level without cutting people.
Mm-hmm.
And give you some ballpark. We have the same maintenance. We have a smaller maintenance crew now with 21 million square feet of schools than we did when we had 8 million square feet. But we'll cut maintenance again. We have a payroll staff right now where we do about 17,000 paychecks. We have the same size payroll staff we had when we did 7,000 paychecks. Payroll will be smaller next year. Teachers assistants. The state proposal that was shared in the article in the paper today talks about no teacher's assistants in first, second, or third grade. The only place they would be is kindergarten. Increase class size, fewer people, assistant principals. Take 50 assistant principals out of the system. We've already cut from when I got here, we've already cut about 30 assistant principals, and we've already taken every assistant principal from an 11-month employee to a 12-month employee. That's just what we're dealing
now,
with.
Now, I did not attend public school as a child. I went to Catholic school, so I don't know what it was like, and it was a different time.
Yep.
But we had 50-plus students in every classroom, 50-plus.
Mm-hmm.
I know at one point, because I used to take roll, we alternated taking roll for the teacher every day, and 55, I think, was the highest we ever had in the classroom. I never saw a teaching assistant in my entire career,
yep.
and I don't know if we had assistant principals. Have things, of course, it was not a great big system like we have here, but have things changed so much that these people have to be in the classroom? I have 20 seconds.
They have. It's a different time. We have different expectations. You know, we had an environment back 20, 30 years ago where you could not be successful in school but yet still have a good middle-class income. And that just doesn't happen today.
We have to take a break. Dr. Peter Gorman is our guest, superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carrie Langley Family Dentistry, a general and cosmetic dental practice for the entire family serving South Charlotte at Carowinds Boulevard and South Tryon Street. Details online at langleyfamilydentistry.com. And the Harvey B. Gantt Center 30th Jazzy Holiday Luncheon tomorrow at the Hilton Charlotte Center City, honoring philanthropists Sandra and Leon Levine and Loretta and Dr. Spurgeon Weber Jr. GantCenter.org. We live in what has long been basketball country. We were home to a lot of talented players, but some of them never got their due. They were left off all-star teams in the 50s and 60s because of the color of their skin. And at last, these players are getting some well-deserved attention. First, the Charlotte Observer wrote about them, and now we're going to look back at those players and at those who played with them, black and white, and we'll meet a man, or two men actually, many of you as some of the greatest players ever to play. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama reaches out to congressional leaders to discuss pending issues, including Bush-era tax cuts, unemployment benefits, deficit reduction plans, and the new START treaty with Russia, prospects for bridging the partisan divide.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon on 90.7 FM WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Peter Gorman is our guest, superintendent of CMS schools, as we talk about the budget crisis they face now and the much larger deficits they face possibly in the future. The article in the paper this morning talked about state cuts, and it was like toward the end of the article that it mentioned that we don't know yet what Mecklenburg County is going to do in terms of funding you next year, because your funds come from several different sources. Have any idea what Mecklenburg County might be thinking?
We do not. I talk with Harry Jones regularly. I spoke with Harry Jones last evening. They are tracking their tax revenues and things, and they've also got the revaluation process that's going to go on for real estate. But we don't have
property values are falling.
They are falling. However, you got to think there'd be some increase in the valuation just because it's been so long since they have done it. You know, the county used to give us about a third of our budget. We now get about a quarter of our budget from the county, and the actual dollars per pupil that we get from the county this year is equivalent to what it was in 2002. So the county, we are very, very grateful for the support. But if you look at the number of dollars per pupil, the county support is shrinking, and the county's struggling.
Let's get back to what we were talking about just before the break, and that is if you face major cuts in the future, you're going to lose teaching assistants, you're going to have bigger class sizes. Perhaps 55 in a classroom might be difficult in this day and age, but what about 35, 40?
I think
where do you draw the line?
I think 30. First of all, the most important thing to have in a class is an effective teacher. If you ask me for my own child, would I want an effective teacher in a large class size or a mediocre teacher in small, I'll take effective and large. But ultimately, the best is an effective teacher with a small class size, because the more one-on-one attention, the more direct instruction to that individual, the better. Some classes also are more acceptable to having a large class size. But if you are talking about young children who are just learning to read, a large class size, that puts kids in great jeopardy.
This seems to me also, if we're going to cut funding, we're going to increase class sizes, potentially lose some good teachers along the way, that this puts the ball back in the parents' court. They're going to have to pull, they're going to have to be in the boat rowing too, right?
Very much so. I was at a screening of a movie earlier this week, Waiting for Superman, and someone asked me about that. They said, so what are your thoughts about this? So really, it's all about an effective teacher. I said, well, from a school standpoint, that's the most important thing we can provide. But what really works for children is when it's a committed, involved parent, an effective teacher, and a student that takes responsibility for their own learning.
Even in the good times, we're putting a lot of pressure, a lot of weight on the teacher.
We are.
A lot.
Oh, yeah.
And from an outsider's point of view, I know nothing about education, as you know. But from an outsider's point of view, it seems to me we're almost unreasonable in our expectations of teachers. We blame them for everything, or we expect them to solve every problem that a child brings into the classroom. And the problems start, it seems to me, in the home with the parent. Well, if the child is not showing up for school, if the child is putting his head down at his desk, sleeping during class, that's a parental problem, not a teacher problem.
Well, I never did any of those things in school, not because I didn't, because my teacher told me not to. I didn't do those things in school because my mom and dad demanded that I didn't. That's true. I think, though, that we do have differences in the effectiveness of our teachers. And we've not talked about that publicly as educators a lot in the past. And there are some folks who will say you are anti-teacher if you talk about the variations or differences in the level of effectiveness of teachers. And I don't think you are anti-teacher if you talk about that. We have great teachers, and we have some that are mediocre, and we have some that are poor. And I think we can talk about that. And the goal is, how do we help those that are mediocre get better? And how do we help those that are poor either get better quick or leave the profession? Mm-hmm. And that's not anti-teacher. That's pro-kid. So that's the piece we can tackle. But ultimately, you know, the teacher's the most important part of education at school. But I can tell you that my own daughter will excel regardless of who her teacher is, because her mom and dad aren't going to let her fail. But it can be boosted to such a level with an effective teacher that it's beyond what we ever would dream.
You have said next year, in the face of increasing potential budget cuts, that you will look closely at transportation, class size, extracurricular activities, support services, programs, and district staff.
Yep.
In your mind, at this point in time, not knowing what those budget figures are going to be, what's the most logical place to start?
Well, we're going to start with district staff again. We've done it every year, and we'll do it again. We have disproportionately cut district staff at a higher rate than any other area, and we'll continue to do that.
And what does that mean to the system when you start cutting away at the front office?
Yeah, well, I'll give you one piece. People said, now when you went through this budget, when you went through this school closure process, there should have been more communication about that. And we should, well, we used to have a communication department that had 27 people that did everything from handling volunteers and ran a TV station, did all that. We got seven now. Mm-hmm. If you look at other things that we used to do in the past, we used to provide more support with psychologists and social workers and family advocates and community people. We just don't have those positions anymore, and we're not going to have them. So those are things that we are putting more and more directly on what goes on at a school. And people say, well, you got to save the classroom. It's what comes first. Yeah, and we had two people that worked on gang issues, both gone. Mm-hmm. We don't have any of those positions. Just sometimes, though, you can say...
This is a good example, Tim, it seems to me, of the school system having to shoulder responsibilities that have nothing to do with education.
Yeah.
Why should you shoulder those responsibilities? Why isn't that the job of the police department, health and human resources? Again, parents.
You know, great question, Mike, and I'll give you one piece. We got a letter from the city. The city will no longer do crossing guards. The city is now going to stop doing school resource officers over the next 3 years, phasing it out. I had a discussion with the county manager, and he did share with me if it has school in the title, it's not their responsibility. Now, he's getting pressures on their finance and budget, so they're looking, what is our core piece? What do we have to do? So for next year, no crossing guards. So if we want them, we've got to add that.
You know, when I was a kid, I was a crossing guard.
Yeah.
In the fifth grade.
Yeah.
There were no adults on the corner. It was just me with my little belt and my badge. Why can't we go back to that?
Well, we could look at something like that, but I'll tell you, I think in today's society, people are pretty leery to have their kindergarten child cross the street and have a fifth grader at a busy intersection. It's just, Mike, I hate to say it, but I think we grew up in a gentler time and a different time.
Okay. We've never seen cuts like this before, have we? In education, have you ever seen it in your professional life?
Not in mine. If you go back, you got to go back to the Depression to see when we cut this deep.
So will this, because the paper alluded to this morning in the article about potential future cuts coming from the state and the drastic nature of them statewide in systems big and small. Will this start a conversation about the future of public schools and about funding new sources or finding new sources of funding that will ultimately be beneficial, or will this be a real test of survival for public education?
I think it'll actually be both, and we're going to have to see folks hunker down and decide what are the basic core services. We're also going through a different time in Raleigh for the first time ever. That's not accurate. We got to go back to the 1800s for the last time we had a Republican House, Republican-led Senate.
Do you view them as a threat to future funding?
No. No, I view it more as the dog that caught the car. You know, a dog chases after a car, and now what do you do? Okay, so now you're in charge, and you got to cut over $3 billion. I expect to see the governor put out a very austere budget and to hand that over to the House and the Senate and work with that, and I think it's going to be a pretty darn difficult time. I think it'll be interesting to see what are some of the other pieces, though, that come that aren't necessarily budget but are policy-related. Right. I think you'll see the charter school cap raised or gone very shortly. And I think you'll see some other initiatives come forward.
But the charter school, if they add more charter schools, the money comes from you. You have to fund them.
Doesn't solve the budget issue at all. The point I was making with that is I think you're going to see parallel policy decisions and budget decisions both going forward. Mm-hmm. So I think the folks that have taken over are going to have certain policy thoughts.
And how do you decide? Because you mentioned that when you start cutting away, you have to decide what the core issues are going to be, what the core of your educational policy is going to be. How do you decide whether arts or language are gone because you can't afford it, or because, or they're part of the core because we know that teaching language at younger and younger ages makes people more fluent in them later in life?
Yep.
Or is it sports that stays because sports, it keeps kids in the classroom, it keeps them interested? Or does it have to go because it's not academic?
You know, that is the debate, and I don't think there's any clear answer. I can tell you that I equally use skills that I learned in extracurricular and within the classroom now as a leader of a school district.
But there's a difference between extracurricular activities and what's being taught in the classroom. I guess football, high school football, is extracurricular, but it does cost money.
Yep.
Art, language, is not extracurricular, but, and it also costs money, but it's in the classroom.
Absolutely, and then there gets to be some debate on what is our responsibility as a school district. Is it to teach the arts? Is it to teach cultural things? Or is it just reading, writing, and mathematics? And I think it's expanded over time what we expect schools to do. And then you have the situation that we've got some families, if my daughter doesn't get exposure to those things, I'll pick it up. And we've got other kids. Without the public schools, it wouldn't happen. I personally see a greater link if it's an activity that occurs outside the classroom that relates back to the classroom, such as newspaper, that we teach journalism, drama, that we teach drama and then we do after-school theatrical things. I see more of a link there. Some folks will say, okay, so right now he's talking, he's anti-phys ed and sport. Now, I see the importance of those things, but if it directly links to something we do in the classroom, to me that takes a higher priority.
Let me share with you some email comments that have come in. George says, and I'm not sure I understand this, how can one support an educator who speaks about having less options? This isn't your decision to cut these things or to have less money coming in to support the things that we've supported. You're having to deal with reality being handed to you on a plate, and it's not silver.
Yeah.
It's a paper plate.
I can't print money. Yeah. So I hear things like that. I just have to look at that and say, wow. Thanks for sharing your opinion, but I don't even know where to go with it.
Well, you know, you came here at a time of growth when money was falling off trees and the challenge was to build schools fast enough and to raise test scores. And you've been successful at doing that to a certain degree, raising test scores in spite of being cutbacks. How long will you put up with this? How long will you stay? Your tenure here has already been longer than the average tenure of most school superintendents around the country, and I think your predecessors. How long will you stay?
Well, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I have a contract through 2014, and I intend to honor that contract. I like what I do. I like living in Charlotte. I enjoy my job. And leadership is, when things get really difficult, you stay in the fight. You don't run and leave it for someone else. I didn't sign up to be superintendent just in the good times. I signed up to be superintendent and lead the district through any time. And you don't bail when things get the worst.
Melanie writes, can you ask Dr. Gorman about year-round schools? Is that something that CMS is considering on a large scale? How can any of us be sure that this will save money?
Well, year-round schools don't necessarily save a lot of money unless you do it on a large scale. We have a trial we're going to do. And, you know, that's one of the challenges you get to when you say you're doing a trial. People come back and say, you're experimenting on my child? No. What we're doing is we're looking to see, can it function for CMS? So not for next year, but for the year after, we will have a year-round school. And we've combined two to make it one. And we'll evaluate how many dollars we can save from that. And there could be a chance that we could recommend a wide-scale year-round program as a cost saver. The main thing year-round school saves you with, though, is capital costs. It doesn't save you as much in the operating side. It's the capital side.
Garrett writes, I have a daughter who will be starting CMS in a few years, and all I keep hearing from my teacher friends is stay away. I would like Dr. Gorman to address where he thinks CMS will be in 2 to 5 years. I'm concerned about redistricting above all else. We're in a good district now, but how can I be sure the lines won't be redrawn next year?
I can't guarantee anyone lines won't be redrawn at any time because of the challenges that we're dealing with. And that's one of the pieces we have, is how do we make every school a great school? And people talk about, how do I know that I stay in a good school? Well, ultimately, while we want every school to be a great school, that means we're going to have to spread our resources differently. And how do we get our most effective teachers to go to our most challenged schools? And when I hear that, no child deserves to go to a low-performing school. So that's why we put the plans in place. We're moving effective teachers. We spend dollars differently. Let me give you a figure. We spend $4,014 per pupil on average at Community House Middle School. We spend $10,393 for someone at a student at Thomasboro. So how do we tackle these challenges of our low-performing schools? Get the best staff, disproportionately spend resources to support those students, and try to bring them up to speed. Because when our kids go to apply for a job, they don't in the interview process, they don't say, did your parents support you? Did you go to a high-performing school? What they say is, show me your academic achievement and what you can do. So we're trying to make sure we educate every child well.
Got a couple of questions, one of which I was going to ask anyway, so I'll let Sarah ask it and Diana about the education lottery. Where is the money from the education lottery? Years ago, CMS was a desired school district. When I moved from Florida last year, I made sure not to be in Mecklenburg County because the schools are so bad. How did it get this way? I think you would take issue with that.
Sure.
Go ahead.
You deal with that. I've got the Saturday, November 20th Charlotte Observer. State report shows CMS progress. We are outperforming. If you look at how our white students do, how our African-American students, Hispanic, poor, not poor, we outperform Wake and Guilford and all those areas. We have some challenges other areas don't have. You can go to some areas just outside of Mecklenburg County and not have the poverty that we deal with, not have the English language learners. Those are challenges we face in Charlotte. If you look at our schools are growing every year. Our schools are doing better and better every year. Spend some time, research, visit the schools, go in and see. That's what I can tell you is you got to go in and put your boots on the ground and look at what's going on. Visit the school.
Because not all of what you hear about schools is accurate?
It's not all as good. It's not all as bad. You got to put your boots on the ground. And I think you're flushing away your money if you automatically say, I'm going to go spend it to buy something without looking at what's available to you right now already.
Getting back to the education lottery, we didn't get an answer. But Diana says, I too would like to know where the money from the education lottery is going.
It's come in two pots. The first pot of money went to the county. Not CMS to Mecklenburg County, but Mecklenburg County by law and has absolutely followed the law and has spent that money on schools, not for operations, but construction of schools.
Well, now that we're not constructing schools.
Paying off bond debt and the schools that we built, that's what's been done with that money.
What would you like to see that money go toward?
Well, that money got taken by the state last year, even though that pot didn't come to the Mecklenburg County.
What do you mean?
State used it to pay off the deficit and took it away from the county. So that money didn't come.
So the state lottery, the lottery for education money did not go to education last year? Is that what you're saying?
That pot of dollars went to the deficit reduction, which education was included in. So it didn't go to its initially intended source of paying off school construction.
And this is what people feared would happen when we got this money, that it would simply rob Peter to pay Paul.
Well, that's one half of it. The other half is dollars went into the state budget to pay for elementary classes, and I can talk about that in a minute.
We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Queen's University of Charlotte and its Master of Arts in Teaching, providing a path to teaching for those with undergraduate degrees in subjects other than education, queens.edu/MAT. And James McElroy and Deal, counsel for the life of your business, practical solutions to everyday and unforeseen problems, serving the Charlotte area over 50 years. Details at jmdlaw.com. President Obama reaches out to congressional leaders to discuss pending issues, including Bush-era tax cuts, unemployment benefits, deficit reduction proposals, and the new START treaty with Russia. A look at the prospects for bridging the partisan divide at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, we'll try to squeeze you in. 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
From healthcare reform in Washington to environmental devastation in the Gulf Coast, From Wall Street to Main Street, WFAE has kept you informed on the most important events of the year. And the news won't let up in 2011 with more changes in politics and battles over taxes and the deficit. Please help us bring that news to you. Make a tax-deductible gift at WFAE.org. That's WFAE.org. And thanks.
We are talking to Dr. Peter Gorman, Superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools on Charlotte Talks this morning. I'm Mike Collins on WFAE, and we were talking about the lottery for education and where that money goes, and you wanted to complete a statement on that.
Yeah, then some money went to class, making smaller class sizes for elementary schools, which did go, those dollars have come every year. However, there's been a requisite reduction in the general fund allocation, pretty much equal to that, so it ended up being about level. Mm-hmm. So the lottery dollars, yes, they have gone to education. If you look at that, they've gone to education. I wouldn't say that we are dramatically better off, though, because that's happened.
Should we revisit the whole idea of having a lottery, in your opinion?
Well, I think we just need to be a little more upfront in our what our selling of it is, that this has not gone to add more. It is replaced. But
that's what we were promised would not happen.
Yeah, I just have a pretty strong feeling that I can't point out to you and say, you see that class that's that size? It's because of the lottery. I can't show you that anywhere in Charlotte.
But can you say this accomplishment was achieved because of lottery money?
As far as paying off some of the school debt, I can. If you take that total amount and you could add it together and say, okay, so it paid for that school. Absolutely. In that case, you can, the capital piece.
Okay. All right. Vincent in Huntersville, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was just calling to ask about going back to a quick blurb about the resource officers being eliminated over the next 3 years.
The funding for them is being eliminated, yep.
Well, I was just wondering if you would actually enforce the zero tolerance policy and eliminate those aggressive students which are in the school system, wouldn't that eliminate the need for resource officers?
Well, I do think we look at enforcing, and we do enforce the zero tolerance policy to the best of our ability. Let me pose a question. So you have a 13-year-old child who makes an infraction that is very serious, but legally we cannot expel a 13-year-old child. But yet you have that student who's in a school, so we move them to an alternative school. So we remove that student from the environment that you're particularly in. That's helpful for that school, but we still have to educate that child, and we still have to prepare them. If that student is not getting an education somewhere, then they are doing inappropriate things somewhere else. And we put them in different schools. We expel students, which we didn't used to do. We have more students that we send to alternative schools, so we follow through with those things. Same point in time, our kids are making different decisions, and they're poor decisions, and we do need officers for safety.
I completely agree with that. That sounds completely plausible, but then there was a case back in 2007 of a Hopewell student who had three severe infractions where he severely beat other students, yet he returned every time back to Hopewell. So there wasn't really a change in that student's status.
I honestly don't know that case, but I can tell you that if we have students that severely beat someone, we expel that student. I'm involved because I press charges from the school district, and we expel those kids. Now, we haven't been successful with every expulsion. We've even had a couple overturned, but the vast majority, the board is 100% supported.
Vincent, thank you for your call. Lori in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Gorman, I have a question. I know we're doing a lot of stuff for the poverty, low-income students, and I think that's wonderful. And the wealthy parents can't afford a lot of the changes that are going on. It's the middle-class parents who've got kids taking AP classes that we now have to pay for these exams, and we're getting absolutely crunched. And we can't afford the exam fees, yet our kids need these classes to get into a good college, you know, to get a good education, get a good job. And my question is, what can we do to help these parents that are kind of caught in the middle?
I think that is a very realistic challenge because we're seeing more and more of that. As we spend money disproportionately for all the right reasons, we got a group in the middle who's getting crunched. And I think some of the things you're seeing is you're seeing fundraising, and I hate the thought that you've got to fundraise for some things that used to be basics. But at the same point in time, we had 11,000, I think, was our total number of advanced placement tests taken last year. we can't afford to continue to pay for those things. So we have set up a way that for our kids who qualify for free lunch, we'll pay. But what we've not solved is we've got another group of kids who can't afford to take that full buffet of courses, and that's where we're seeing booster clubs step up and other things. I think that's where we're going to be needing to reach out to other community members. We got the Bobcats and the Charlotte Touchdown Club to pay for some things regarding athletics. I think our next piece that we're going to have to move to is how do we do some things to support some academic programs, and I think you'll see that be a move coming forward this spring.
Thanks for your call, Laurie. I don't want to open new wounds or peel back the scabs on old wounds, but I do want to spend just a second or two talking about what happened with Waddell and Harding, because there was a flip-flop there. There was a situation where I think it was Harding students came to support Waddell students at a meeting, and just before they got to the meeting realized it was Harding that was going to be closed, not Waddell. And then the board, about a week later, reversed its decision on that. What happened there?
Yeah, well, the first thing that happened is I think that the initial recommendation we made was wrong. And at that time, I thought it was the right decision to make. We changed our recommendation, and then the board went back to the first recommendation that we made. I think the first recommendation we made was more in line with the guiding principles. The board voted to go a different way, and I'm absolutely going to do everything in my power to make it work. And I think we switched it too late in the game.
And either way, whichever decision you ultimately decided upon, it was going to cost money because you have to convert the school to be suitable for younger students. So it's going to cost money. So in an effort where you're trying to save money, does it make sense to spend money to convert a school?
It absolutely saves money in the long run. So there's one-time upfront cost.
And
so, yes.
And what problems, if any, do you anticipate as former Waddell students merge into Harding? Because a lot of negative things were said about Waddell students by Harding people in the course of this conversation.
Well, that's one of the situations where we have to call on people to welcome them with open arms, and that's going to be difficult for someone to see a student who said something negatively, and we're going to have to call in the entire community to help and assist with that. I think a big piece of how that happens will be how does the Harding faculty and how does the Harding administrative staff handle welcoming those folks, and what's the onboarding or what's the process that goes on this spring, and how do we include those folks? And the Harding principal, I believe, is absolutely up to that.
You pointed to a headline in the Observer from a November paper that talked about improving academic achievement at CMS. And the district's graduation rate has risen by almost 4 percentage points in the past year. The black-white-Hispanic achievement gap is narrowing. Do budget cuts mean an end to all of this?
I think it jeopardizes it. We do get to the point where it is going to be so much more difficult to do, because when you get to the point that those class sizes are larger and we're not able to have as many effective teachers, I am not trying to set the stage for a drop and to give us an excuse, because we just got to keep trying to deliver. But what I'm telling you is, to do the same amount of work that we have done, there is so much more being asked of our teachers, our administrators, our staff, everyone. I know just from a personal standpoint, there were four people in my office. There's now two of us. So I'm doing more. Hey, it's a tough time. I'm going to do more. But teachers are feeling that same crunch. When teachers' assistants are cut from the elementary classes, and those teachers' assistants were used by teachers to do a small reading group with kids who were struggling, now that teacher's got to pick that up along with the other pieces, that can't help but to have some impact on achievement.
As I understand it, North Carolina is in line to get $400 million in race to the top money from the federal government, with CMS slated to see about $15 million of those dollars. What impact, if any, will these budget cuts and the school closings and the reshuffling of students have on the system's ability to get race to the top money?
It won't. We'll get that. We'll get the 15.1, but that's 15.1 million over 4 years. So, you know, it's just under 4 million a year. So at least half of that will offset cuts we would have been making.
And
it would take a $90 million reduction down to 88.
And it's rumored that U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan allegedly favors school systems that close under or low-performing schools, I guess when he decides who he's going to give money to. What role, if any, did that play in your decision to close the schools that you've decided to close?
First of all, it's not accurate. He doesn't favor those. There are four models for helping low-performing schools. Enclosure is one of them. It doesn't give any increase in status. It is one form. You can do turnarounds. You know, for example, the one model that he's talked about more than any related to Charlotte is what we do with what we call strategic staffing, where we put in a new principal, new assistant principal, and inject some new staff. That's the model that he's actually highlighted from Charlotte, and he's encouraged us to do more of.
Okay. Ed, speaking of national involvement in public education, the Obama administration, Ed writes, has made education one of its priorities, and Carolina was successful in their getting money from Race to the Top. What do you think the role of the federal government should be in our schools?
I'm a strong supporter of national standards, and I think the federal government should be more vocal, and they have moved forward with the Common Core academic standards that about 45 states have adopted so far. And I do think that there should be some federal assessment, and they are moving forward with some federal dollars that were allotted already, and North Carolina is a part of that, with an assessment. I think what students need to know, and did students know it, I think there's got to be some way that we can compare a student in North Carolina with Washington State, California, Maine, and Florida, that there shouldn't be a different standard everywhere. That's an important role, and I think that's one that the federal government's stepping up on.
Larry says, I ask from ignorance, instead of trying to make the current system work, are there other approaches vastly different and worth looking at? Are there new technologies that might evade current problems?
Absolutely. I think we got to completely look at how we're using technology. I was talking with the guy who was the founder of SAS, the large software and computer company, and he said in many cases the least technologically engaged a child ever is when they come to school. How can that be? He said, yeah, they got to put down their mobile device. They're not texting. They're not on their laptop when they come to school.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have to change that model, and I think as well we've got to look at our delivery using technology. Are there times when students can be doing things themselves with a computer? Are there times with kids can do that online? And are there lessons that need to be taught in small group, lessons that can be taught in large lecture group? I think we got to completely invert that.
Well, Margaret writes, I have heard of using technology to help schools in this way. The best math teacher, for example, is to put on a video to allow all students access to his or her talent. Fewer teachers, better quality. What about that? You know, when I went to college, introductory classes at the University of Maryland were taught on television. They got some really good professor who had some show business in his blood, and he taught the introductory classes on TV.
I took macroeconomics in a class of 800 and frankly did pretty well with it.
What about that?
I think we have arcane rules related to seat time and class size, which make no sense whatsoever.
Is it within your power to change those rules, or are those state rules?
Majority of those are state rules. I think that we will see a major push for that. We should be able to have some classes that have 50, 60 kids and other classes that have kids struggling. Should have five.
If Wake County has the best trigonometry teacher in the high schools, why shouldn't kids here have the benefit of that teacher and vice versa?
Well, a couple pieces to it. One is Wake could have adopted different standards, which why don't we have common standards? Why is it? How is algebra different in one community than another? It's algebra. So I think we're addressing that. But then the other piece is, yes, I think we've got to dramatically change that. But we've wanted to have local control so much. There's some ways that we're hurting ourselves.
Merrill writes, when will it be time for you to come out and support tax increases? The midterm elections locally and nationally seem to be a referendum on jobs, but the state is basically asking you to make the unemployment problem worse. It seems criminal to me that taxes or tax increases are not supported.
That is a job for our politicians. That would be our Board of Ed's job. I stay out of that piece. I get tangled up enough into politics.
What will these budget cuts do to your ability to hire talented teachers and administrators going forward?
I think it will dramatically impact that, because I think it becomes less inviting for individuals to enter into the field altogether.
You're closing 10 schools, and you're talking about tearing down several of those 10 schools. Is that wise? Here we are, a school system that couldn't build schools fast enough and still growing. To tear down schools that may be needed if the economy improves suddenly?
Well, those are schools that over time we're going to have to replace. So there are some that I do think need to come down. But there are other cases where I'd like to see other uses for those buildings until we need them again.
Earlier in this conversation, you brought up charges of racism, et cetera, and there were accusations that the cuts and closings of these schools and pupil reshufflings came at the expense of people in the lower economic levels and low-performing schools, which are not in Ballantyne, and they're not in Eastover, and they're not in Myers Park. If there are future cuts, will more affluent areas be impacted?
Well, what I would say is we spend $4,014 to educate a middle school student in Ballantyne. And if you look at, we spend $10,300 to educate an elementary student at Thomasboro. It's not about equal, it's about equitable. And mm-hmm. we're trying to provide an equitable opportunity, and kids take different levels of resources. These cuts will hit every area. I think when we went through this last process, though, we made some decisions which made it harder. When we took Myers Park Traditional and Elizabeth Traditional off the plate right away, that drew skepticism. So, yeah, that makes people look and say, how is this fair? How is this equal? We made some decisions that I think made it harder.
Are you optimistic overall about your ability to provide quality education for the kids here, given the tools you have in your toolbox?
Yes, because our teachers are more effective every year. Our teachers are stars. Yep.
Dr. Peter Gorman, Superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, thanks for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike.